Welcome to this deep dive.
Great to be here.
In this lesson, we're exploring common cyber threats and online risks.
Which is such a crucial topic right now.
Oh, absolutely. And if you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along.
Right, we'll make sure it all makes sense.
Exactly. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Because it really is a skill, you know?
It is. And as technology becomes like so deeply connected in our digital lives and our future careers, the cyber threats, well, they're constantly evolving right alongside it.
Yeah, the landscape shifts constantly. But navigating it safely doesn't actually require a degree in computer science.
Thank goodness for that.
Right. It really just requires a specific mindset.
Yeah. And to build that mindset, I like to tell people to think about your digital presence, like your physical home. I mean, in the real world, you wouldn't just leave your front door wide open when you go to work, would you?
Definitely not.
And you wouldn't hand out copies of your house keys to, you know, complete strangers walking down the street.
No, that would be crazy.
But so many professionals often, totally unintentionally, do the digital equivalent of exactly that.
Oh, all the time.
They reuse a weak password across like 50 different websites,
which
is essentially leaving their digital doors unlocked.
Yeah. And that risks identity theft, severe malware infections, financial fraud, I mean, massive privacy breaches. But, you know, the goal of understanding these threats isn't to operate out of fear.
Right.
Or to be terrified of the internet. It really comes down to digital awareness.
All right, so being aware rather than paranoid.
Exactly. When you understand the mechanics of how attackers exploit systems and more importantly, how they exploit human psychology, you drastically improve your cybersecurity readiness.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, knowing how the mechanisms work, it kind of strips away the mystery, right? And replaces it with actual protection.
So let's talk about the actual threats. Because malware does the bulk of the damage, but we need to understand what it actually is and how it functions.
Right.
And the term itself is just short for malicious software, right?
Basically, yeah. It's any code designed specifically to damage, disrupt, or exploit systems.
Okay. And there's that really prevalent subcategory that we see on the news all the time, ransomware.
Oh, ransomware.
It's the one shutting down hospitals and oil pipelines. I mean, what makes it so devastating compared to the older viruses that, you know, just used to crash your computer?
Well, older viruses were often just about vandalism, like breaking things for the sake of breaking them.
Right.
But ransomware is a highly lucrative business model. It doesn't just break your machine. It uses military-grade encryption on your data.
Wow. Military-grade.
Yeah, it scrambles your files using complex cryptographic keys. And the math behind this encryption is so robust that you literally cannot brute force the decryption key before the universe ends.
Wait, literally?
Literally. The attackers hold the only key, and they demand financial payment, usually in cryptocurrency, to hand it over.
Because crypto is hard to trace.
Exactly. It's basically a digital hostage situation.
That is terrifying. But that brings us to how that malicious code actually gets onto the system in the first place.
Right, the delivery method.
Yeah, which is where hacking comes in. But the reality of hacking today isn't like someone guessing your password by typing rapidly while green code rains down a screen.
No, not like the movies.
Right. It's much more automated.
It's extremely automated.
Yeah.
Unauthorized access to systems today relies heavily on volume. Attackers use techniques like credential stuffing.
Credential stuffing. What is that exactly?
So when a massive database from a popular website gets breached, millions of usernames and passwords end up on the dark web. And attackers buy those lists. Then they use automated scripts to test those same login combinations across thousands of corporate VPNs, banking sites, email providers.
Just banking on the fact that people reuse their passwords.
Exactly. They are betting on the fact that human beings are creatures of habit.
But wait, I have a question about this. If hackers have all these incredibly advanced credential stuffing tools and, you know, automated scripts and complex zero-day exploits,
yeah,
why are we seeing so many poorly spelled phishing emails? I mean, if hackers have all these advanced technical skills, why are they spending so much time just trying to trick us into clicking things? Is human psychology actually the weakest link in our digital infrastructure?
That is a great question. And the answer is return on investment.
ROI, really?
Yeah. Why spend weeks trying to aggressively break through an enterprise-grade firewall, which, by the way, is noisy and likely to trigger security alarms?
Right. It sets off the digital alarms.
Exactly. Why do that when you can just send an email to an employee that says, urgent, your payroll deposit failed, click here to verify your details.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The human mind doesn't have an operating system patch.
That is such a good way to put it.
This is social engineering. Attackers manipulate people into revealing confidential information or bypassing security controls for them.
So they basically bypass the technical infrastructure entirely by targeting our psychology.
Yes. They rely on cognitive biases. Social engineering often leverages urgency or authority.
Like pretending to be the boss.
Exactly. When you receive a message from what appears to be the CEO demanding an immediate wire transfer, or, say, from IT threatening to lock your account in 10 minutes.
You panic.
It triggers your amygdala, the part of the brain responsible for the fight or flight response.
Right.
And that biological reaction temporarily suppresses your prefrontal cortex, which handles critical thinking.
Wow. So you literally stop thinking critical.
You stop analyzing the email address and just react to the manufactured panic. Manipulating people is almost always faster, cheaper, and vastly easier than bypassing complex security software.
That makes total sense. And it brings to mind a recent case involving a university student from our source material.
Oh, yeah. The attachment case.
Yeah. So this student received an email with some highly suspicious attachments. And, you know, the standard advice is usually just don't open it or delete it.
Right.
But this student actually identified the risk and actively reported the message to their IT department. And because of that specific action, a wider malware infection was completely avoided.
That's a perfect example of why reporting is such a crucial practical skill.
Yeah.
Because attackers always cast a wide net. When a phishing email hits your inbox, it has likely hit hundreds of your peers simultaneously.
Right. It's not just you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you just delete it, you protect yourself. But when you report it, the security team can extract the file's digital signature, its hash.
Okay.
And then they can program the network to instantly block any email containing that specific file. You help build an immediate immunity for the entire organization.
It reminds me of, like, walking down a public hallway and seeing a massive water spill on the floor.
Yeah, great analogy.
You don't just step over the hazard and keep walking, thinking, well, I didn't slip, so I'm fine.
Right, you'd be putting everyone else at risk.
Exactly. You report it to maintenance, so the next person coming around the blind corner doesn't slip and break their ankle. You neutralize the threat for the community.
I love that. Taking that active role fundamentally shifts your posture from being a potential victim to being part of the defense mechanism.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure.
Realistically, alert fatigue is a massive issue. In a fast-paced work environment, taking the extra time to verify every message or double-check an attachment feels like a productivity killer.
It can feel that way, yeah.
Like, how do you balance being efficient with being secure? If every employee reports every single slightly weird email, won't the IT department just drown in tickets?
Well, it would overwhelm them if IT staff were manually reading every single report.
Right.
But modern corporate environments use automated security operations centers, or SOCs.
Okay, so robots are reading it?
Basically. When you hit report phishing, it often goes into an automated triage system. It strips the email headers, analyzes the routing data, and detonates the attachments in a safe virtual environment to see what they do.
Oh, wow. So the heavy lifting is automated.
Exactly. Security teams actually rely heavily on user reports to feed those systems the raw data they need to identify new attack campaigns. They want you to over-report rather than under-report.
Okay, so taking that student's experience, let's project this into a digitally enabled future workplace.
Let's do it.
Imagine you are a young professional. You just landed an entry-level role in a highly connected corporate environment. I think the instinct is to assume, I don't have administrative privileges, I don't have access to the company bank accounts, so hackers don't care about me.
A very common misconception.
Right. But attackers aren't just after your personal passwords anymore. They want to use you as a gateway to exploit the entire organization's systems.
Yes. This is a concept known as lateral movement.
Lateral movement.
Yeah. Attackers look for the path of least resistance to get inside the perimeter. And the entry-level employee's email account is a trusted internal address.
Ah, so it bypasses the outside firewall?
Exactly. If an attacker compromises that account, they don't stop there. They use it to send a malicious file laterally to the finance department or up to the executive suite.
Wow.
Because the email originates from inside the building from a trusted colleague, the internal spam filters are often less rigorous, and the human target is far more likely to open it.
So in a workplace setting, verifying suspicious messages carefully becomes a critical job skill, not just a personal chore.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental professional competency.
But getting back to that productivity killer idea, if I call my manager every time they ask me to do something quickly just to verify it, I'm going to look inefficient.
I get that. The tension between efficiency and security is exactly the space where social engineers thrive. But, the math of that productivity loss changes completely when you look at the alternative.
House.
Well, business email compromise, or BEC, costs organizations billions of dollars annually. And recovering from a ransomware attack takes weeks.
Weeks.
Weeks. It requires forensic investigations, complete network rebuilds, legal compliance reporting, and managing severe reputational damage. The company grinds to an absolute halt.
Oh, wow. So it's not just a minor inconvenience.
Not at all. The 60 seconds an employee spends verifying an unusual request today prevents a 5-week operational blackout tomorrow. Prevention is the ultimate time saver.
That makes perfect sense, and that balance between productivity and security brings up the broader ethical responsibility of being a connected professional.
It really does.
We have to consider responsible online behavior, understanding that your personal device's security impacts the wider network. Let's look at public Wi-Fi, for
Oh
example.
boy, public Wi-Fi.
What is the actual danger of connecting to airport Wi-Fi if I'm just, quickly checking my bank balance or looking at a project file?
The primary risk there is a man-in-the-middle attack. Public Wi-Fi networks at coffee shops or airports are open and inherently unencrypted. An attacker sitting in that same coffee shop can easily set up a rogue hotspot named, like, Free Airport Wi-Fi.
Oh, and people just click it because it looks official.
Exactly. And when your device connects to it, the attacker sits directly between you and the router. They can use packet sniffing software to intercept the data flowing back and forth.
Wait, so they can see my passwords?
Even if you don't type your password, they can capture your authenticated session cookies and clone your active login.
That is wild.
Yeah, unless you were using a trusted virtual private network, a VPN, to create an encrypted tunnel for your data, you just have to assume everything you do on public Wi-Fi is visible. Poor personal digital hygiene can compromise an entire network.
Okay, I have another major pain point to ask you about. Software updates.
Okay.
People universally find software updates annoying because they interrupt work. I mean, I update my phone or my laptop, and half the time all I notice is my battery drains faster and the app icons change color.
Right, the UI updates.
Exactly. So are you saying that putting off updates is actually a form of digital negligence?
I'm absolutely saying that. The user interface changes are just the cosmetic layer. The reality is that the vast majority of software updates are critical security patches.
Security patches.
Yes. Complex software consists of millions of lines of code, and inevitably, there are structural flaws. Attackers discover these vulnerabilities.
Like what?
Like a buffer overflow, where they figure out how to stuff too much data into the system's memory until it crashes and allows them to execute their own malicious commands.
Wow. So a patch is literally patching a hole in the code.
Yes. When a manufacturer releases an update, they are closing a back door that hackers are actively exploiting in the wild.
Okay.
Going back to your house analogy, it's like knowing the lock on your back door is completely broken, the lock manufacturer ships you a reinforced replacement for free, and you just leave it sitting in a box on the kitchen counter for 3 weeks because you didn't feel like getting a screwdriver.
Oh my gosh, that really puts it into perspective.
Putting off updates is a form of digital negligence. Keeping devices and applications updated is a core pillar of responsible use and cybersecurity readiness.
Okay, so moving from the theory of responsibility to actionable habits, let's establish a clear checklist for the listener to build into their daily routine so they can adopt this digital confidence immediately.
Good idea. The foundation relies on four persistent habits. First, exercise extreme caution on public Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah.
Use a VPN or use your phone's cellular hotspot instead. Second, verify messages carefully. Look closely at the actual email address, not just the display name.
because they can spoof the display name easily.
Exactly. And if a message creates a sense of panic or extreme urgency, pause. Break the communication chain and verify it through a different channel. Like just call the person directly.
Third would be avoiding unknown downloads and unexpected attachments. If you aren't expecting a file, do not open it, no matter how enticing or urgent the file name claims to be.
Absolutely. And fourth, persistently keep your operating systems, applications, and browsers updated. Don't hit "remind me tomorrow" on the patches. Just do it.
Now, we also have some specific practical tools mentioned in the source material that act as digital safety nets to supplement these behavioral habits.
Right, the software tools.
Tools like Malwarebytes, Avast Security, and VirusTotal. Now, Malwarebytes and Avast are solid examples of anti-malware software that actively scan your system. But VirusTotal is a bit different, isn't it? How does that actually work behind the scenes?
The VirusTotal is a highly effective, free online service. If you receive a suspicious file or a strange link, but you aren't entirely sure if it's dangerous, you don't have to guess. And you don't have to rely on just one antivirus program. When you upload a file to VirusTotal, it calculates the file's cryptographic hash, its unique digital fingerprint.
We talked about hashes earlier.
Yes. And it checks that hash against more than 70 different security engines globally.
Oh, wow, 70.
Yeah, it's comprehensive. Furthermore, it can detonate the file inside a sandbox.
A sandbox, like a fake computer.
Basically, yeah. A secure, isolated virtual environment to observe its behavior. If the file tries to secretly modify registry keys or contact a known malicious server, VirusTotal flags it. And it does all this before the file ever touches your actual hard drive.
That is so cool. I really like thinking of these tools combined with the regular software updates as a kind of digital immune system.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, think about it. In your body, your immune system fights off a thousand little battles a day that you don't even notice, so you can just go about living your life.
Right.
And in the digital world, you install tools like Malwarebytes. You verify strange links using resources like VirusTotal, and you allow the automatic updates to run. You're giving your devices the antibodies they need to do the heavy lifting in the background,
Exactly.
freeing you up to focus confidently on your work without constantly looking over your shoulder.
That's a great way to put it. Your behavioral awareness is the primary defense, the active choice to not walk into a hazardous environment. And your software is the immune system that catches whatever microscopic threats slip through the cracks.
So, bringing all these pieces together, the evolution of the threats, the realities of lateral movement in the workplace, our responsible habits, and these immune system tools, it all ties back to the overarching goal: digital confidence and lifelong learning.
Definitely.
So, I want to pose a core reflection question directly to you, the listener. How can greater awareness of cyber threats improve my digital safety?
And as you consider that, remember that cybersecurity is not a static destination.
No, it's constantly changing.
Because cyber threats continually evolve, staying aware and adaptable is the key. New forms of social engineering powered by artificial intelligence will emerge. New malware architectures will be written.
It's inevitable.
It is. Maintaining long-term digital protection means embracing continuous practice and adjusting your habits as the technology changes. It's about reducing risk over time.
It really is a continuous journey, and to help you continue that journey, we strongly encourage you to stay curious, act responsibly, and remain future ready.
Absolutely.
Make sure you review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities. Specifically, there's a vital activity where you need to research malware, including ransomware, as well as hacking and social engineering, and then identify prevention strategies for each one.
That hands-on research is so important.
It really is. Doing that targeted research yourself is what bridges the gap between just hearing about these concepts and actually applying them to your life.
Could not agree more.
And if you want to explore the broader implications of these topics, there are some fantastic resources available for further reading.
Some really great books out there.
Yes, I highly recommend checking out the books Cybersecurity and Cyber War, Future Crimes, and The Art of Deception. They provide incredible depth on everything we've discussed today.
Great recommendations.
Thank you so much for joining us on this learning experience. And next time you sit down at a coffee shop and connect to an open public Wi-Fi network, ask yourself, if the internet connection is free, who is actually paying the price for your data?
A great question to leave on.
Until next time, stay safe out there.